Hi, I'm Mark Webber.
Hi, I'm Daniel Ricciardo, also known as the best looking kid in the F1 paddock, and you're listening to the Keeping Track podcast.
You're listening to Keeping Track, the official podcast of the Australian Grand Prix.
In this week's episode, we look ahead to the final races of the F1 season with Red Bull's Mark Webber. Rising Mexican star Sergio Perez joins us to discuss his move to McLaren. And we analyse Lewis Hamilton's decision to join Mercedes next year. There's all that and more on Keeping Track, the official podcast of the Australian Grand Prix.
Welcome to Keeping Track, the official podcast of the Australian Grand Prix. Matt Clayton with you on location at Suzuka for episode 18 of our show, where we'll start our wrap-up of the Asian swing of this year's Formula One World Championship. Over the next 25 minutes, we'll hear from Red Bull's Mark Webber and new McLaren signing Sergio Perez, while Williams race team manager Dickie Stanford also joins me as we discover just how the teams move people and freight around the world at the busiest time of the season. But first, there's been an enormous amount of news around since F1 went to Singapore in September, and much of it focused around Lewis Hamilton's bombshell that he was leaving McLaren to drive for Mercedes. I caught up with one of the sport's premier freelance journalists in Tom Clarkson, whose work we see on our TV screens in Australia with the Ten Network, to discuss the fallout.
Tom, thanks very much for joining us. The Lewis Hamilton news must have been enormous back home in the UK. What was the reaction like, and what are people saying about it?
Well, it's been dragging on for quite a while, and I think there was a lot of relief that it's finally over. When we left Singapore, McLaren were giving very positive feedback to anyone who had asked, saying they thought they'd got him for next year. And then, of course, 2 days after we all got back to the UK, he signed for Mercedes. I think there was an inevitability about it. If you remember this time last year, Lewis was in particularly bad form, a bit like a teenager wanting to leave home, I felt. And so he's just waiting. He was locked into this year from the five-year deal that he signed at the end of 2007. So he knew he had to go through this year. He was never going to stay at McLaren in my book. It was a case of where could he go. I know he sought out Red Bull again for next year. But, of course, they've got our Mark for another season. He even talked to Fernando Alonso about going to Ferrari. There is no issue between Fernando and Lewis. But really, his only option was Mercedes, which is why he's ended up there. And I think he made up his mind a long time ago. I think he felt guilty about leaving McLaren, which is why he slightly dragged it out. And when the news actually broke in the UK, of course it was big news. And I think no one was actually that surprised, bizarrely. People were much more surprised by who's replacing him at McLaren, Sergio Perez, because he's much, you know, Lewis Hamilton is probably the fastest man in Formula One today, and he's being replaced by a guy who I think, if you speak to people off the record at McLaren, they're not 100% sure themselves about Sergio Perez. I know as we sit here in Suzuka, he hasn't been to the MTC, he has not met anyone in the team, I'm talking about Perez, except for Martin Whitmarsh. So there are a lot of question marks still about him.
Getting back to Lewis for a second, you mentioned Red Bull, obviously, you mentioned Ferrari. These are two teams, along with McLaren, who you can pretty much throw in the mix to be a chance of winning a race week in, week out, season in, season out. He's now going to a team, yes, he has some familiarity from an engine supplier and with Norbert Haug and what have you. They've won one race in 3 years since they took over, or, you know, became from Braun GP. This is a pretty significant risk, isn't it?
It doesn't look good on paper, does it? But I think that's part of the attraction for Lewis. I think he slightly feels that he walked into the best car in 2007, his first Formula One season. And I think he's excited by the challenge. And he even used this phrase himself. He wants to do a Michael. He wants to drag a team up and get the credit that comes with that. I think he wants to work with Ross Brawn. I know Ross Brawn is very excited about working with him. So I think he will win races next year. I think the car is going to be better. The car hasn't been bad on occasion this year. Let's not forget, China totally dominant. Monaco would have won the race had Michael started from pole position. And I think with Lewis, there's every reason to think he's got a good 3 or 4 tenths on both of the Mercedes drivers now. And if you look at where that would have put him on the grid at various races this year, he would have been very competitive.
Now, you mentioned Sergio Perez before. It was a a huge shock, I suppose, given his background as a Ferrari driver, academy driver. You've got two schools of thought here. Ferrari have repeatedly said this year they didn't think he was ready for a seat at the big table, and McLaren have come and given him one. So the interesting thing about that is that one of those two great teams is going to be wrong. Do you think it's a little bit too much too soon, and how do you see his potential? He's going to be expected to win races from Australia next year, isn't he?
He's definitely going to be expected to win races, because I think next year's MP428 is going to be a very good car. They're ending the year, McLaren are ending the year with the best car now, and with no rule changes over the winter, it's obviously going to be there or thereabouts next year. I think, yeah, it's a fascinating thing. Which of the two heavyweight teams in Formula One is going to be proved right about Sergio Perez? I don't think, when you look at his CV, he's not your archetypal McLaren driver. He hasn't done anything in the junior formulas. His best result was finishing second in GP2. You know, he started out in motor racing in the Barber Dodge Championship in America, and he finished 11th, a season that was won by Marco Andretti, who hasn't done really anything in IndyCar, let alone Formula One. So, to me, it raises various questions, him going to McLaren, in that either there's something that the wider world doesn't know about Perez, in which they've seen by looking at telemetry that maybe Sauber have given them, but I think that's unlikely. I think it could suggest a shifting of priorities within McLaren, in that are they now an automobile manufacturer first and a racing team second? Because, of course, Perez would open up the American and Central American market to McLaren Automotive to sell their MP412C and their new P1 road car that's coming on off the assembly line next year. So is that the priority now? And, of course, Sergio's got the richest man in the world, Carlos Slim, backing him. And so it opens all sorts of avenues. Is Vodafone leaving the team and they need a replacement in Telmex, the Mexican telecommunications company? So it raises all sorts of questions there. And, you know, Perez, I would imagine the happiest person in all this is Jenson Button, because I would imagine he's pretty confident that he can keep Perez at bay.
Now, of course, we've got this great game of musical chairs happening, and when the music stops, sometimes you're left without one. And that's a situation we find ourselves with. Michael Schumacher announced his retirement in the Suzuka paddock. It was a fairly low-key retirement for a man I think we overlook a little bit sometimes. 7 world championships, holds just about every conceivable record in the sport. The 3-year comeback hasn't been what he and a lot of his fans would have hoped. How do you assess the 3 years, and do you think it was the right time to go?
Well, the 3 years have been very disappointing. He came back thinking he was going to win races and maybe another world championship. Was it the right time to go? He, I believe, wanted to do one more year, and Mercedes said no, they wanted continuity over the engine regulation change in 2014, so they wanted a minimum of 2. Schumacher couldn't offer that, which is why he was dithering over the summer break. Suddenly Lewis became available. I don't think Michael believed for a second that Lewis would leave McLaren, that, you know, such a good team. Never took the threat seriously, and before he knew it, Lewis was in the team, and he's been sort of forced out, as he was in at the end of 2006, because Ferrari signed Kimi Raikkonen. So it's an unfortunate way for Michael to go. As you say, huge achievements in this sport. A wonderful driver. Ross Brawn called him the driver of the century when at that retirement announcement. It's slightly sad that it's come to, you know, I really wish he hadn't done these last 3 years, because I think the legacy that he had at the end of 2006 was impeccable. And now I think people are raising question marks about what came before. You know, was that era of drivers not as good as this era of drivers, etc., etc.? You know, or has Michael got slower? He claims not. He's got more experience has sort of counteracted the fact that he's got a little bit older. But so it's a sad state of affairs. I hope he has a good last 6 races, and he can go out on high. That's my wish for him.
And just finally, we're seeing you more and more on our TV screens in Australia, doing your work with Channel 10 and 1, Greg Rust and Daryl Beattie and the guys. You are enjoying that, and are you picking up the Aussie accent, or is that still a bit of a mystery?
The Aussie accent is a mystery, but I love working with the boys, you know, Rusty, Daryl, Beto, brilliant people, even Michael Heaton. Huge privilege to work with those guys, and, you know, learning a lot of Aussie swear words. That's the main thing I'm learning. But no, great fun, and what a brilliant show the guys put together. And let's just keep hope. I hope that we can just keep making it bigger and better. And it's brilliant that Mark's re-signed for next year, so that we've all got something to really focus on. And actually, just while we're talking about next year, Dan Ricciardo with James Key designing next year's Toro Rosso, hopefully they might shunt up the grid a bit more. So lots to look forward to.
Absolutely. Tom Clarkson, thanks very much for joining us.
Cheers, mate.
Tickets to the GP breakfast of the 2013 Formula One Australian Grand Prix are now on sale. This exclusive breakfast will be held at the Crown Palladium Ballroom on Saturday the 16th of March from 8am till 11am. Featuring guest appearances from motorsport legends and F1 drivers, it's the perfect way to kickstart your Grand Prix weekend in style. For more information, visit grandprix.com.au. This is Keeping Track, the official podcast of the Australian GP.
...2012 is Mark Webber's 11th Formula One season, but the Australian has never experienced a campaign that finishes with six races in just eight weekends. I caught up with Mark in Japan to find out how he'll prepare for the hectic finish to the year and to discuss Red Bull's form surge in the Asian leg of the championship.
Mark, pretty brutal end of the year for you guys coming up. Six races, eight weekends, three sets of back-to-backs. How do you prepare yourself mentally as well as physically for that? You don't have much recovery time and also, you know, the travel and everything else. How's that going to work?
Yeah, just to be trying well organised, obviously. It's been on the schedule for a long period, so as a team and also from a driver perspective, we've done what we can to make sure that we turn up at each race fresh, as you say, healthy, get the travel as efficient as possible, and put the weekends together as best we can in terms of all the demands that, you know, also going to India and, you know, there's lots of different challenges that come with certain locations we go to in terms of, you know, staying healthy and stuff. So, yeah, it's all part of the plan, and, it's not always straightforward, but that's what part of professional's been about, is we need to, prepare ourselves as best we can.
And you based yourself in Oz last year. I'm assuming you're doing that for a reasonable batch of the Asian flyaways again. Did that help last year in terms of time zone changes and just less travel and something?
Yeah, I did it for this event, just coming up here to Suzuka in Korea, so I was down there after Singapore, and I will go back to the UK. I've got work to do. We've got a lot of work to do in Europe, basically, for the next two flyaways, so I'll be based out of Europe for those two.
And in terms of how the car feels this year compared to last, you obviously lost the exhaust blown diffusers, and, you know, the high-speed circuits will probably show that up a little bit more. What's the biggest difference in terms of how it feels for you behind the wheel, 11 to 12?
Low-speed corners are probably the whole cars were different racing last year. So, yeah, you had a huge low-speed performance advantage because of the blown floors, giving the car a lot of downforce and traction events and that sort of stuff. And then also in the high-speed stuff, we had, you know, ways where we could help the car aerodynamically as well. So, it's a big difference issue.
Now, I know you're not a big believer in bad luck, but you've certainly had, shall we say, some misfortune. Won the British Grand Prix, signed a new contract, and since then you've had most different sorts of penalties that could happen. You've used them all up in one batch of the season, unfortunately.
Yeah, let's hope so. Let's hope they're out of the way for the last five events, I suppose. We've had, you know, diff problems and some penalties, of course. But you know that you make your own luck, and I think that ultimately we have not been competitive enough. We need to work hard. Obviously, Seb's off the back of a good result in Singapore, but up until then, it's been pretty hard yards for us as a team. But we're looking to finish the season very, very strongly. I'm looking to get some more victories before the year's out, and coupled with some consistency. You know, like we started the year, you know, with all those fourth place finishes, which at the time were very frustrating, but, you know, they were very, very important for me. I'm not looking to do those type of results to finish year out, but certainly the consistency and then, get the odd victory will be very nice.
And before I let you go, you were back in Oz when the league grand final was on. Obviously, Craig Bellamy was a big part of the Raiders when a few pictures from your days being tweeted last week with some very high shorts on, and you must have enjoyed, seeing a league grand final in your own time zone, and, great win for those guys, given they've got a lot of connections to your past.
Yeah, it was a great week to be in Australia for both finals, AFL and NRL, but, of course, I'm much closer to the NRL. As you say, growing up as a young lad, being surrounded by those guys, I watched Craig play as a player, and then as a coach as well, I've been to see the players a few times at Melbourne Storm with him there, and he's done such an amazing job. I think it's five premierships or something hideous, and they just really do get the job done when it counts. I think that, you know, they've they've got some star players, but also you can't just win a match with three players. You know, they've got some you know, really, really tough and consistent players that you know, do get the job done. But it was a highlight for me to be back home for that. And yeah, even the build-up for Bathurst was weird. I've never been really in Australia for that either. So it was, you know, I was trying to work out the last time I've been to Bathurst, which was like 17 years ago. So yeah, it was interesting to see all those type of events take place when I was in Australia.
Well, could get a taste of home halfway through the season. Mark Webber, thanks for joining us.
Cheers, thanks.
Don't forget to like the Australian Grand Prix on Facebook for behind-the-scenes news, updates and exclusive opportunities.
This is Keeping Track, the official podcast of the Australian GP.
Mexican Sergio Perez is in just his second Formula One season, but the 22-year-old has already shown enough promise with Sauber to earn a multi-year contract with McLaren. Perez has been a man in demand since his 2013 plans were announced, but we found him for a quick chat.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about Austin coming up. In some respects, you don't have a Mexican Grand Prix, but it's going to be about the closest thing that you will experience, I suppose.
Yeah,
so with a lot of fans coming from your country to see you, how do you feel about that?
Very happy, very happy, very excited. In the last 8-9 years, I think it will be the closest I will drive from my home. Yeah. So it will be a very special Grand Prix for me, and I hope we can do a very good performance there for my countryside.
There hasn't been a Mexican Grand Prix now for 20 years. Are you hopeful? There's been some discussions that perhaps it could be back on the calendar at some point. Are you optimistic that that could happen for you?
Yeah, that would be great if we can have one day Mexican Grand Prix.
And when you go to a new circuit like Austin, you've obviously been to some new tracks already in the season and a half. How do you prepare? How far out do you prepare? And what do you do to prepare to go to a new track?
We try to be very prepared in terms of focus and try to learn the circuit in the simulator, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So that we try to be there as ready as possible.
Now, it's been an amazing year for you, obviously. Three podiums. I'm sure they each have you know, good memories for you, but is there one that, you know, was there a drive of those three podiums so far that you really remember as, you know, when you were pushing or you felt that you were really attacking the whole race?
I think all of them, they've been very special weekends. Will not race one of them because I think they were an incredible drive, both of them, three of them. Mm-hmm. So I will not point out one thing. Probably my first podium in Malaysia was quite nice, but all of them, it's been a great feeling.
And all of them from outside of the top 10 as well. I mean, in different conditions, it must be, you know, it must do a lot for your confidence to know that you can do that, different tracks, different conditions, different circumstances.
Of course, it would be very special if we can do a good job tomorrow.
Now, your two years here with Sauber, what's the biggest difference between, say, Australia last year when you made your debut to now in terms of your confidence and how you've developed as a driver? Is it just more experience or is it something?
Yeah, obviously more experience, more confidence, and everything is really good for us. We just try to be as good as possible and we try to prepare ourselves in the best possible way.
And obviously the McLaren news recently, massive news. How was it received back at home? Have you got much of a sense of how it was received back in Mexico?
It's great. It's great for me to be close to my country when I signed for the best team in Formula One. It's really special.
And in terms of your readiness to, you know, there'll be pressure on you from the first day you step into that car next year, you feel ready for that and the responsibility of that?
Yeah, of course, I feel ready and I'm very committed to win the championship because that is the target when you jump into that car.
Well, we wish you all the best. Thanks very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Don't forget, you can follow the Australian Grand Prix on Twitter at AusGrandPrix.
This is Keeping Track, the official podcast of the Australian GP.
Transporting the cars, freight and people around the world to undertake six races in 8 weeks is no small task. So to get an idea of how the teams tackle the back end of the season, I chatted to longtime Williams race team manager Dickie Stanford on the morning of the Japanese Grand Prix at Suzuka.
So Dickie, thanks for joining us. You've been doing this role for quite some time now, and we've got an end of the season here where we've got six races in 8 weekends with three sets of back-to-backs. Is this as challenging an end to the season as you can remember in your time?
Yeah, it's very challenging not to make any mistakes where you want all the equipment and where you can send freight and where you can't.
And, you know, I'm assuming just in terms of sheer numbers of personnel and amount of equipment, how many people are Williams taking to each Grand Prix and how much freight are you casting from place to place?
We're taking about an average of 80 people per race. The number of air freight is about 26, 27 tonnes of air freight, and then you've got sea freight on top of that.
So obviously with these back-to-backs, we've got some pretty tight deadlines. It's a fair bit of the world to travel with some of them. Are there any that are particularly difficult, just from a logistics or a time zone point of view, or quick turnaround with things like customs and what have you?
Actually, here to Korea is going to be pretty tight. After the race, you obviously turn the cars around, and then you've got to pack everything up. So we have to do all that. Normally we take till about 1 o'clock in the morning, normally. Here we have to be finished by 10 o'clock because the air freight has to go tonight. And then we fly to Korea tomorrow and the freight arrives midday on Tuesday.
Right, okay. So not much room for error there.
No. And the other thing is you're limited what you can send into Korea. So the hand baggage and stuff is very limited. And once we finish Korea, we can't send anything extra into India. It's such a nightmare that you have to arrange everything to come to here that you need for India, because it has to go in the main freight.
So does that include technical directors bringing bits in their hand luggage, or is that another subject entirely?
No, that's the problem is if the Indian authorities catch anything, they will confiscate it.
Right.
So if you try, let's say in Europe, you carry an extra suitcase with all the bits and pieces in, here you won't be allowed to when you go into India.
Dickie, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Tickets are now on sale for the 2013 Formula One Australian Grand Prix from March 14 to 17 at Albert Park. Make sure you don't miss the chance to book early and get the best seat in the house to see Mark Webber and Daniel Ricciardo on the grid at their home Grand Prix. Go to grandprix.com.au or call Foxtix on 1800 100 030 to find out more. This is Keeping Track, the official podcast of the Australian GP.
We now have just three races to go in this year's World Championship. And after such an unpredictable start to the 2012 season, it seems normal service has been resumed, which means Sebastian Vettel is seemingly rolling towards what would be a third straight title. Vettel's been his imperious best since F1 went to Asia. He's won four straight races from Singapore to India to open up a 13-point lead in the championship over Fernando Alonso. The scale of Vettel's dominance, he's led 206 straight laps after Hamilton retired from the lead in Singapore with a gearbox problem. He's won Japan, Korea and India by leading every lap. The last driver to do that, incidentally, Ayrton Senna, 1989, winning three races in a row, leading every lap. Pretty esteemed company. He now has 26 career wins, which is one fewer than Sir Jackie Stewart, which is a pretty extraordinary stat. Japan really the key race in those four. Alonso out on lap one with a spin and a puncture. Vettel winning and really narrowing the gap and seemingly careering away towards that third title. Vettel's teammate Mark Webber finally broke a run of outs. He had podiums in Korea, finishing second, and India third. And while we're talking Australians, Daniel Ricciardo managed three consecutive points finishes from Singapore to Korea. All of them terrific drives, holding off Michael Schumacher in the final laps at Suzuka. Great effort there. And also finishing ninth from 21st on the grid in Korea after a gearbox penalty. So he's really finishing the season strongly. The other big news scuttling around Formula One in the Asian League, Felipe Massa re-signed for Ferrari for 2013, despite one podium in his last 37 Grand Prix. And we talked Lewis Hamilton earlier with Tom Clarkson. Since Hamilton signed for Mercedes next year after the Singapore Grand Prix, that team has scored precisely no points in three races with Nico Rosberg and Michael Schumacher. They're actually the worst performing team outside of the three newest teams in the period. So I wonder how Lewis feels about that 2013 contract situation right now. So all of that leaves the state of play with three races to go in the season as this. Sebastian Vettel, 240 points leading the Drivers' Championship. Fernando Alonso, 13 points in arrears. It really is a two-man championship. There still are three other drivers who are mathematically in contention. Kimi Raikkonen is third. He's 67 points adrift. Hasn't won a race this year, but he has finished 16 out of 17 races in the points. Mark Webber, 167 points. He's 73 points off the lead. He's now just 6 points behind Raikkonen and really finishing strongly. So perhaps third in the championship again is in the offing for Mark. Lewis Hamilton, 74 points behind the leader, now fifth. Daniel Ricciardo, 18th in the championship, 9 points. And as I said, really coming on strong towards the back end of the year. The constructors' title really looks like Red Bull's now. 407 points for them. Ferrari, 316 points in second, and very close behind McLaren on 306 in third. So that brings us to the end of this edition of Keeping Track. Don't forget to like the Australian Grand Prix on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at AusGrandPrix, and go to grandprix.com.au, where you'll find a complete archive of all our shows. Thanks to Barbara Prosky, Heikki Heinch and Sophie Eden for all of their help, and a big thanks to Tom Clarkson, who will convince to get on Twitter one of these days. Thanks for listening, and join us again on Keeping Track soon.